Hello and welcome to the Brotherhood Without Manners podcast, the Game of Thrones podcast with me, your host, Ryan McBride. I hope you're enjoying my new choice of intro music anyway. I thought it was a bit appropriate for the week that's in it. Sorry, I'm just coughing from all the ashes that have gone down my throat after Daenerys sacked the city. She sacked it. She burned it. She burned it all. She burned everyone. And yeah, people are not happy. People are a bit surprised. People are a bit taken aback by the sheer carnage she's unleashed upon the ordinary folk of the city who are just going about their daily business whenever a fucking dragon came by overhead. Yeah, surely, I don't know, I thought they might like circulate some memos to say, you know what, there's going to be a dragon coming here in about a week. You might want to leave the city. It might not be that safe. Take your valuables with you, and if you come back afterwards, you might be grand, but you're better off being out of here. And no, they didn't. There seemed to be a full city, full house, 1 million people, three quarters of whom are probably dead now. And yeah, that's where we left it off at the end of the episode. I'm just going to go back through it and see, was there any sense to it? I'm just going to go over some of the few bits of dialogue that were there near the beginning. Other stuff that happened, Clegane Bowl, talk about Varys, his death, talk about, just go through all the characters. Same thing as normal, same routine. Even though this is exceptional circumstances, we're just going to fly through it and see what the crack is. I'm going to start with the first, with the character from the first scene of this episode, Varys. Varys is no longer with us. R.I.P. Varys died being right, and as I'm sure he was disappointed to hear for once. He died being right that Daenerys was eventually going to go mad and sack the city, but did his betrayal contribute to sending her over the edge in the first place? Did he actually do more harm than good in that way? That's kind of up for debate. It's probably a whole lot of other factors, but I think one of her closest advisors actively plotting against her didn't help things that much. A lot of people missed this, actually, but he tried to poison her at the beginning of the episodes using that little girl, one of his little birds. She was actually in Winterfell in the crypts. Anyway, he must have brought her with him, or maybe he brought her to Winterfell as well. I don't know. I don't know what their relationship is, whether they're pals or what the crack is. Whether it's a Davos Shireen job or not. But anyway, he tried to poison Daenerys, but she refused to eat. She had been refusing to eat for a couple of days. That looked like a bit longer, judging by the shape she was in. She was not in good shape, lads. So as well as doing that, as well as trying to poison her, actively trying to kill her, he was sending out letters pretty much announcing Jon as the heir to the Iron Throne, the legitimate Targaryen. So we can assume that most everybody knows, or at least the people who matter, whoever they are anymore, know that Jon is the rightful heir to the Iron Throne, whether he likes it or not. But who did they send the letters to? As I said before, who are the influential people in Westeros? Or maybe it was even beyond Westeros. I have a feeling that he was sending it, some of these letters to the Iron Bank, whatever your man's name is. I think he might have sent one to Dorne, to this new prince. He probably sent one to Sansa, although she knows. But other than that, I can't think of anyone else. Has anyone else really been mentioned that could affect this? Was he looking for help from Ashai? I seriously doubt it. But anyway. So before he got arrested for treason, he took off his rings and burned the last of the letters he was writing. And I'm just wondering what the significance of the rings could actually be. I mean, was that like a cue for him to get his little birds to tell people who are in the know that Varys is dead? Like, was this... Has Varys got like a pension, not pension, has he got like a will sorted out, or is that like a message to his solicitor to say, to spread his estate, whatever his estate is, or whoever his descendants may be, or not descendants, his What do you call that whenever you die? Your beneficiaries? I think, no, beneficiaries is like someone who payrolls you through something. I don't know. Someone tell me the answer to that, because I'm kind of curious about it now, and I just can't Google on air. Because this is live, definitely. But yeah, I'd say Varys was kind of worried enough, especially since the last episode. I think Daenerys using the term root and stem was a bit of a tip-off as to the type of person she was, because that is the term that the Red Priests used to him whenever they cut off his gentlemanly parts. But anyway, when he was in the cave underneath where Stannis and Melisandre used to torch people to death for not believing in the Lord of Light, he said, you know what, I hope I'm wrong. Probably not, but I hope I'm wrong. You know what, and I might be better off dying now so I don't find out. And he was, because he was right. Yeah, Daenerys turned rogue, and I have to say now, I was a bit surprised at all this. Like for a solid 10 minutes I was watching that and I was thinking, is this like a daydream or something? Because they haven't really, like, she did it all of a sudden and they didn't really express the snap moment where she flipped. Like, the bells rang. She looked a bit, like, overwhelmed by, I don't know, anger, emotions or something. She was just kind of looking. And then she just went ahead and started burning the place down. And, you know, there's no explanation for it. And people have been like, you know what, she's showed signs of this before, which she has. She's burned people before. But everything she's done so far, there has been, like, there's been reason, there's been cause to do it. Like, the crucifying the slave masters, she did that because they crucified, you know, children and ordinary people, slaves. She burned down Vast Otherac because, well, they weren't very nice people. I suppose the people of King's Landing weren't very nice people either, but, you know. But, you know, everything she's done, and she's actually shown mercy as well before. She offered the Tarleys an opportunity to bend the knee and join her cause. She didn't do that for the people of King's Landing. But I was just wondering, before she started torching all the people, she kind of looks down at the crowd running beneath her. They run away from her even after the battle's finished. They are scared of her. They don't love her. And I wonder, is that was she on the way to the Red Keep, saw that people were running away in fear of her, in terror of her, and she was like, fuck this, you know what, these people are afraid of me, which, you know, is understandable at the time. But is that like a treason for her, like, of people running away from her whenever she flies by? I don't know. It's just one thing that went through my mind whenever I saw that. But even in this episode, there was stuff happening that was leading up to it. Like, she called, like, this is a weird one. She called Grey Worm by his Valyrian name, Torgon Nudo, or whatever it was. She wasn't using the common tongue, which I don't know whether it was a gesture towards Grey Worm to be like, all right, I'm relating to you right now. This is me talking to you in your tongue. Or was it more of, was it trying to project what she was thinking and feeling about the people of Westeros at that moment by, you know, saying, you know what, these people don't even like me, I'm not even going to use their tongue, it's fine, I'm an Eastern Queen now, and I'm, as an Eastern Queen, I'm going to burn this place down, because this isn't my home, and if they don't love me, they fear me or they hate me. She seems very fond of extremes like that. And then whenever John shows up for the sexy time, or rather the lack thereof, Daenerys asks him, is that all I am to you, your queen? And John kind of hesitated, pulled back, and was like, and that pause kind of told it all, and she was like, very well, fuck off now. And he did. And that could, was that the powder keg? Was that the spark to the powder keg that is Daenerys? I don't know. I think people have handled rejection better in the past. Then later on in the episode, they pull towards the throne room, I think, in Dragonstone, and Tyrion is kind of trying to talk her down, talk her out of burning the place, kind of annihilating the city, raising it to the ground by being like, when the bells ring, just show mercy. When the bells ring, show mercy. And in fairness, she nodded to Grey Worm whenever he said that. But before that, she kind of used this kind of cop-out line. Like, she was saying that Cersei saw mercy as their weakness and stuff like this. And then Daenerys did this politician thing of being of using the same words, but using it to convey a totally different, to justify totally different actions by saying, well, this will be, will show mercy towards the future generations by absolutely annihilating and showing no mercy right now, which is a total cop-out. I was listening to that and I was like, oh, come on. Who are you trying to fool with this? So is someone in the room like listening? And yeah, they were, but they couldn't do anything about it. She was kind of unstoppable at that point. Then on the way out of the throne room, I think we may have found out how Tyrion is going to die, because Daenerys revealed that Jaime was captured, and she said, the next time you feel me, it will be the last time you feel me. And of course, Tyrion goes on ahead and releases Jaime later on in the episode, which is kind of sealing his fate. So God help him. Onto the battle then. A lot of people were surprised at how poorly Cersei's scorpions were working on Euron's scorpions on the Iron Fleet, because they worked so well last time. Of course, last time they had the element of surprise, but I don't think that really accounts for much of it. I think Daenerys did have a battle plan going in. She went down from directly, vertically down, upwards. I don't know what directions are which, but she went down from directly above them and torched them from there, swung around the back, which of course she was able to do much faster than a load of ships could, and she was able to torch them from the back as well. I saw a lot of people on the internet during the week suggesting she should do that. There was actually a meme of it, and in fairness to her, she listens. She's a slow learner, but she learns, as Sansa would say. But yeah, I was just so disappointed after the bells rang, and she just kept attacking and attacking, and I think everyone who's watching was. I think that's kind of a uniform thing across the whole fandom. But I think it was foreshadowed. I think they ramped it up a bit too much. I don't even think they ramped it. I think they should have built it a bit more, and I think that if they paced season 8 better, then it would have worked better. Of course, they didn't. If they even had another two episodes just to show her growing more and more isolated, it would have worked a lot better. The apparently 2 years wasn't enough to film an extra two episodes. But yeah, anyway, onto Tyrion, who is probably dragon dinner now. Next time you feel me, it will be the last time you feel me. He let Jaime free in a bid to prevent slaughter of all the innocent people. On the way in there, I think it was, I don't know whether it was an Easter egg or not, but he failed to speak to the Unsullied in their own language. And last time he tried to do that, well, last time he tried to speak in a foreign language and utterly failed, it was, he had Varys to help him, and it was like towards this beggar woman. And she must have thought he was trying to eat her child. But this time he had no Varys to correct him, because Varys is gone. It showed just how much he relied upon him. And I thought that was a nice touch. Whether it was purposeful or not, I don't know. Whether it was just some slapstick humour at this crucial point of the season. But anyway, yeah, he let Jaime free so that he could help her surrender. help Cersei surrender, that is. But of course Daenerys is rendered pointless by burning everyone anyway. Who actually rang the bell as well, though? That's what I was wondering. Like, because Jaime clearly didn't do it. And, I don't know, it didn't show anyone doing it. But so some intrepid explorer must have rang the bell. Fair play to them. But anyway, summary. Tyrion's going to be in big trouble next episode. And I don't know whether he's going to flee, whether he's going to go with Jon, whether he's going to go back to Daenerys and be like, oh yeah, we're missing, yes, Jaime, yes. But Jaime, I know for certain what he's doing next episode. He'll be decomposing. And, yeah, a lot of people aren't happy with that. That's one of the biggest gripes a lot of people have with this. See, the way I'm avoiding showing my own opinion on this stuff by saying, well, you know, a lot of people... I'm using the cowards away by saying a lot of people are doing this and I'm not really expressing how I feel. Just to say, I'm disgusted by the way Jaime's arc has turned out. Like, he's gone straight back to what he was at the beginning. And I don't know whether this was like a twisted love conquers all, sort of like a perverse version of that, but his arc is a seesaw. He started off being this dickhead who fucks his sister. He starts becoming a good man and eventually starts riding someone else, then he goes straight back to the sister. And it's like, it's not even just that, he's like, he even badmouths the ordinary people in King's Landing by saying, well, I didn't care much for them anyway, innocent or otherwise. Like, it's not just that he's going back to his sister, he's being arrogant again and a bit of an elitist. And I don't know, I had to laugh whenever he didn't get into the city, whenever he got stopped at the gates. And I was like, yeah, fuck you. That's what you get. And I hope he got trampled, but he didn't. He managed to find his way in the back door. And then he had this stupid fucking pointless fight with another dickhead, Euron, who's like, come on, like, you're the only person that washed up. Well, isn't that fortunate for you? You managed to have this epic battle then with Jaime at the end. I don't know. Like, Euron's main life goal must be just, like, being a pest towards everyone he meets. And he broke the fourth wall in such a, like, I'm the man who killed Jaime Lannister. And that's a fucking awful voice. But anyway, I should cut back on my impressions because they're getting worse, people. But as much as people criticize Euron, Jaime's character has basically changed as much as Euron's has at this point. As much as Euron is one-dimensional, at least he's consistent. Jaime's story has been pointless, really, isn't it? I don't know. Maybe not. But I saw, in fairness to Jaime, I saw someone actually, I don't know whether it's a cop-out or someone finding ways to justify it, but I saw someone compare it to, you know, Jaime being someone with a destructive addiction, which makes sense when you think of substance abuse and stuff like that in the real world. And I suppose if you look at it in that perspective, it's kind of a cautionary tale, maybe, because he ended up hurting himself and all the people around him by doing that. But then Jaime made a promise to himself. He said he wanted to die in the arms of the woman he loves, which he did. And so did Cersei. Well, she didn't promise that, but she died in the arms of the man she loved. Tyrion actually predicted that a couple of seasons back by being like, well, I can't remember the start of the quote, but he said, the joy is going to turn to ashes in your mouth and you know that the debt will be paid, which was like, I'm going to get revenge on you. And the ashes in your mouth thing is just kind of the most pertinent part of that quote. But Cersei, throughout this episode, she was just in such denial throughout. Like, she couldn't see herself losing, even though, like, all the scorpions are gone. And, like, she was like, oh, the sellswords aren't as good as Lannister soldiers. They'll fight to the death for me. And then the next scene is just, like, all the Lannister soldiers throwing their swords at the ground, being like, oh, fuck this, no way. not up for this. You know, it was quite funny. And only when all was lost did Daenerys kind of snap out of it and be like, oh, she started crying and then she left along with Qyburn, who, in fairness to him, he's better at consoling people than I thought he would be. And he had another funny moment through it in this episode. Whenever he got bashed against the wall, he went splat whenever the mountain decided to dispose of him, which I thought was fantastic. And it was just like Dr. Frankenstein or something like that. But a lot of people, again, with this, a lot of people, Ryan, but it is true, a lot of people did feel dissatisfied with Cersei's end. What I wasn't. I thought it was okay. I thought it was good, because Game of Thrones did their thing where they make us sympathize with characters that we should not sympathize with. And whenever she was kind of sobbing about her child dying, like, that's, you know, you can't not feel sorry for her in that moment. But then again, on the other hand, I would have liked to have seen her suffer a slow, humiliating and painful death, as would most of the people out there. But you know what? They rolled it out in such a way that, you know, Cersei, unlike Euron, is a complex and well-built character. This is gonna upset some people if they ever hear this, which they probably won't. But I feel like Clegane Bowl might have been a bit of a distraction. It was a bit of a distraction for me. Like, if we took away all the scenes of Clegane Bowl and we were like, you know what, we're going to just add another 10, 20 minutes of conversation into this episode or into this season to help, you know, pad out the story, I would have been like, I'm all for it. And even if they shortened the sacking of King's Landing a bit, I know it was supposed to be epic and all the rest of it, but most of that episode was just Danny burning the place to the ground. I feel like we could have lost another 5 minutes of that so that we could understand why it was happening. I don't know whether you agree or not. Tweet me at BrotherhoodPod if you feel the same way. What else happened to Clegane Bowl leading up to it? Qyburn's funny death, splat. The mountain's still the mountain. The mountain is still the mountain. The Hound kind of brought him back to life for real in a way that Qyburn never could. He just brought him his personality back. You know, the eye gouge, the bare chest, the, you know, breaking the rules. And I suppose at the end of the fighting there between the Hound and the Mountain, they had a nice touch where the Hound kind of stabbed the Mountain through the eye, and the knife came out the back of his head, just like Arya threatened the Hound with a couple of seasons before, which, you know, she was giving him ideas as well. She was learning some stuff from her, and he kind of rugby tackled them then through the wall into the fire and killed the Mountain, hopefully. We don't know that. Or potentially killed the Mountain by plunging him into fire, just like the Mountain did to him whenever he was a child. But he killed himself in the process. So, like, speaking of Arya, she played our eyes on the ground. She was kind of like a GoPro through the city. And yeah, there were some kind of cool shots, guys. There's some good shots of the carnage that was happening throughout the battle, and just how chaotic it was and how horrible it must have been to be there if it was real, which it wasn't. Remember, guys, Game of Thrones isn't real. And she was just trying to do her bit, you know, save some children. She didn't really help anyone, admittedly. But she tried, which is a good thing, which is, like, different to what she was doing before, which is just killing people. So you're never going to be good at it on your first go. But one of the children she tried to save had, like, a white horse toy. I don't know if anyone else noticed this, but at the end of the episode, she kind of saw the little white horse toy kind of charred, and then the charred remains of this body, and it was basically like, "And you fucked up, kid." But anyway, then that was just before she saw the white horse, the actual horse, show up, which a lot of people are speculating over the symbolism of that. And I've just got a few things that it could symbolize that I've searched on the internet, the source of all facts, 100% factual, even no matter how much they disagree. So one meaning could be death, which is from, like, from the Bible somewhere, I think the Book of Revelations or something. So death was ridden like a pale horse, and hell followed with him. If you want to look at it like that, Arya is kind of like a bringer of doom anyway, so wouldn't be anything new for her. It could be like her faceless god being like, here, you've done me good, so here's your ticket out of this town. Another way to look at it was, you know, Daenerys rode one before she got Drogon, so it could be like Daenerys's old life coming to be like, come on, sort yourself out, I'm going to get Arya to kill you now, which is something that can likely happen next episode, although I don't know if they'll give one character that much killing after the Night King. Ned wrote one as well, so it could be like, you know, she's honorable like her father, she's gonna end up in Winterfell. I don't know, she's just like, I don't know whether it's just being like, well, she's a Stark and she's going to look after the Starks now, and she's going to ride up to Winterfell on this white horse, just like Ned did. Other meanings you could take from it is that, like, it's a symbol of heroism. Like, everyone's talking about Shadowfax from Lord of the Rings, who I thought was called Shadowflax. Like, I don't know why I kept reading it the wrong way. It must have showed up so many times in that book. Or those books. I read Lord of the Rings all in kind of one assembled book thing, which was handy, so I wouldn't have to fuck about with loads of different little books. Everyone get it. And then Pegasus as well, from the Hercules story, or Greek, whatever it is, Greek mythology.
Mythology.
But one thing a lot of people are wondering about that horse, a lot of people including me, is, did Bran warg into that horse to save Arya especially? I think it's a possibility because, you know, help out a sister, literal sister. I think that could have been what happened, because it's just like, Bran's been sitting there on his hole doing nothing this entire season. I think if he managed to repay Arya for saving his life by saving hers and getting her out of the wreckage of King's Landing, I feel like even as the three-eyed crow, the three-eyed raven, he seems to have some appreciation of what other people do for him, like Theon. And maybe she has some purpose for the rest of the season, who knows. But yeah. The Hound and her had a good little moment of a farewell in the episode as well, which is nice. So I don't know whether they put her in the city just so she could see a lot of death, so she could distance herself from it, or whether they're just giving her like an excuse to add another name to her list, Daenerys. So who knows what they're going to do there, which way she's going to swing. I think she's going to swing towards the murderous side, because of course she is. But anyway, onto another Stark, Jon Targaryen. He's got a target on his head. He betrayed Daenerys now twice, I think. Yeah, twice. He told Sansa about his true identity, and in fairness, Daenerys called this. She was like, once you tell one person, everyone's going to know. And everyone knows. And it's too late to put the toothpaste back in the toothpaste tube. And another treason he had, which I don't know, Grey Worm caught it anyway, is that he refused to slaughter the Lannister soldiers after they surrendered, which, you know, fair play. I think everyone would have done the same, and I think it was, you know what, it would have been stupid and just awful to do that. But I feel like in doing that, they're kind of planting a showdown between either Grey Worm and Jon, or Daenerys and Jon, or both, for the next episode. So that's, I feel like that's on the horizon. I don't know. Could this all have been avoided by Jon giving Daenerys the D in the start of the episode? Maybe. But it's all going to come out at some point, I think. So better come out now than later. I don't even know why it would be better. I don't know why I said that. Ryan, this episode is just a fucking shitstorm of weird, going back over what I'm saying. Onto Grey Worm now. He's kind of abandoned all sentiment in this episode. Like, he didn't feel like surrendering. No, he didn't feel like honoring the other side's surrender. He just slaughtered them anyway. He just absolute bloodlust throughout that battle. And he just, even at the start of the episode, whenever he got Missandei's chain or whatever it was that she brought over, the only thing she brought over across the narrow sea. He threw it straight in the fire as soon as Daenerys gave it to her, to him. Like, I think that just shows he was like, I don't know whether he's turned back into the drone that he was before. He's kind of lost his personality, his flair now. And he's just a lean, mean killing machine, unbothered by fear or anything else. I don't know. I just don't know what's in store for him or for Davos on that matter. Like, he was busy helping civilians escape, like the smuggler he is. And I feel like he's going to be in Daenerys' fire line as well now if Tyrion is, because, you know, Tyrion told him to get Jaime in, and I don't know. There's going to be her list of executions is going to be long. But I'm just wondering, like, from this episode, from this season, did Bran see all of this coming? Like, why bother vouching for Jaime or waiting out for him all night? I'm just wondering, why did he wait for Jaime all night? I've been wondering this all season. I don't think I'm going to find out. Like, did he save him so that Tyrion would be condemned by Daenerys? Or did he do it just so to sow mistrust with Daenerys Tyrion vouched for Jaime in Winterfell, then he vouched for Jaime again by letting them out of the little prison thing, and I think that's kind of undermining the relationship that Tyrion and Daenerys had built up. I don't know how it would help. Like, it's only leading things further towards Daenerys's turn towards a mad queen. I think it's the first time I've used those two words together in this episode. I don't know. I feel like it's suspicious, if not nefarious. But I feel like on Bran, the way that Jaime died, or maybe, yeah, actually, this is what I was getting to. The way that Jaime died, a castle fell on him after Bran fell out of a castle being pushed by Jaime. Was he just being like karma, bitch? Was this whole thing just so to get revenge on Jaime Lannister and his unborn child? If it is, then you know what, you can't be angry at that. That's just something else. And yeah, up in Winterfell, Sansa's screwed. Unless she has a good hiding spot, she's fucked. Absolutely fucked. I mean, how long is Daenerys gonna wait before going up to Winterfell and sacking there too? Will she even make it that far up, or will she kind of sit on her arse for a while and scratch her arse on the Iron Throne and before melting it down? Who knows? She's got plenty of soldiers left. There's an absolute heap of Unsullied left, judging by the season 2 trailer. The Dothraki look back at their best shape again. I don't know. I don't hold up much hope for Winterfell if Daenerys goes unchecked. Like, how are they going to kill a dragon? How in God's name are they going to kill a dragon? Unless Yara managed to rob one of the ships off Euron, I don't know. I don't think it's looking likely. Well, then again, if Bran was able to copy the design of one of the scorpions, and I don't know, get that written down somewhere. I heard people talking about weirwood ballistas for the scorpions. Well, could they knock down the weirwood tree in Winterfell to do it? I don't know. Who knows? But speaking of Yara, actually, in the Greyjoy fleet, they didn't appear at the battle, and I don't know. Whenever she finds out what happens in King's Landing, is she going to still follow Daenerys, or is she going to switch sides to the Starks? Because I feel like, I don't know whether she's an opportunist or that she follows her heart or what's the story. Like, will she follow Daenerys even if she doesn't believe in her, just because she's scared the shit out of her? Gendry's gone. He's not going to appear anymore. I have a feeling he's just finished for the season. If he does, is he going to be faithful to Daenerys? I don't know. I think he'll follow whatever Arya is doing, to be honest with you. Dorne, will this dude ever appear? Like, he was mentioned this episode, or not this episode, but some episode at some point. I can't even remember. It's all kind of meshing into one big long episode for me. Is he going to appear? Unlikely. But if he does, he's probably going to side against Daenerys. That's probably the only reason they would introduce that, is to be like, well, actually, Jon's not doing too bad. His side have got another army coming from the south. But anyway, is King's Landing finished? Because there's nobody left there. All the buildings are destroyed. Red Keep's gone. Is there any point even trying with it? What's the new capital of Westeros going to be afterwards? Anyway, that's my analysis of the episode, the penultimate episode of Game of Thrones. Meanwhile, another news, the title and a kind of a synopsis of one of the new spin-offs of Game of Thrones has been announced. It's going to be called Blood Moon, I think. Let me just double check that. Yeah. Game of Thrones prequel. I'm reading the New York Post here to get this story. Game of Thrones prequel series, What We Know About Blood Moon. I might just read this out, see if it's if I'm getting any exclusives out of this. I'm definitely not, because I'm reading it off a news article, but I'm going to claim it as my own anyway. So this was previously announced that he thought the prequel should be titled The Long Night, but what does he know? He only authored A Song of Ice and Fire. So the plot of it's going to be set more than 5,000 years before the events of the current series. The new series will follow the story of the Children of the Forest. So basically, what happened was, whenever they were writing Season 8, they had to rewrite the whole fucking thing because they wanted to release a new prequel series so they could make even more money. So they cut out the Nightwalker threat, or explaining the whole reasoning behind the White Walkers, so that they could stuff it into a new TV series that'll run for a couple of years. So they're following their wallets, rather than giving us a satisfying end to Game of Thrones. I feel like that's what's happening here, and I feel a bit betrayed by that. But we're gonna get a bit more Westeros, Planetos content for the next half decade maybe, so that'll be nice. But still, I'd rather have a more satisfying, meaningful end to the one we have, because there's been nobody's talking about the Night King anymore. I really thought they would loop back and try and tie it all together. They haven't. It's disappointing, but sure, what can you do? But anyway, the season finale, the series finale awaits. What are you expecting for it? What's going to happen? Who's going to die? Let me know. Tweet us at Brotherhood Pod. Send us a message on Facebook, Instagram. Do all that stuff. And see you on the other side.